Hello, everyone. This is Tom Regan. I'm a licensed addiction counselor and certified grief counselor for Heartview Foundation in Bismarck. And welcome to a program we call Recovery Chronicles. This is a half-hour interview program that celebrates recovery from alcohol and drug addiction. Our special guest today is Susie Bartosz, and she is 32 years old. She's from Bismarck. She happens to be the residential director at New Freedom Recovery Center in Bismarck, and she is a person in long-term recovery. So good to see you, Susie. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me here. I appreciate it.
Tell us a little bit about your growing up years. This is always my first question. What kind of a family did you come from and things like that?
Well, I grew up here in Bismarck. My family is from pretty much Michigan, so I'm the only true North Dakotan in the family. growing up was, actually I had a really good childhood, I would say. Like, things weren't terrible. I was loved. Went to school here, and I can't really remember much of my childhood. It seems to slowly come back a little bit.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have one brother and one sister. So they're like, my brother and sister are 6 and 7 years older than me. So I was almost like, when I graduated sixth grade, my sister graduated high school, and then my brother shortly after that. So I was almost like an only child for middle school and high school years. that was another experience, kind of being on my own, because when things started to go south for me was my seventh grade year, actually.
Yeah.
Something came over me, and I wanted to die, and I didn't know why. Yeah. Like, it was just like that, and I still don't, and I couldn't really explain it today. Maybe it was puberty. I don't know.
Puberty, hormones.
Because that happened. Yeah, you get those feelings, and you don't know what to do with them. Yeah. And so that's when it was the first drunk I had was at age 12, actually.
Yeah. Hmm.
And that I found that's to be really- like... Yeah, that's what I found to be like my, like, okay, I don't feel good. I'm going to do this. Now I feel better. That was my solution then.
Yeah. So kind of in a way then self-medicating, right? I was, as I look back on my adolescent years, I had just oodles of anxiety.
Right.
I thought I was, at times, I thought I was going crazy, and I blame that on adolescence and the hormones and everything.
Right, and growing up and trying to, figure out who you are, I just remember feeling like I didn't belong. When I was younger, I was a tomboy. I remember being made fun of and being like, I don't fit in with the girls quite because I'm not girly, but I don't fit in with the boys because I'm not a boy. Feeling lost, alone, and afraid, and not knowing what to do or where to turn to, and like feeling, getting that inadequacy feelings and that anxiety. So, taking that drink, just that, I fit in, I feel better, I have confidence.
So it was alcohol. So alcohol is your so-called drug of choice?
It is, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. And did you drink during the day or before you got to school or after school? Or?
Well, when I was in middle school, I remember I learned the hair off the dog thing, and that really set me off to a new realm of, oh, I'm hungover. Well, what's the cure? You just keep drinking. So when I discovered that, that even escalated my alcoholism even more. But by the time I was 16, I was a blackout drinker already.
Wow.
And and I was like, oh boy, I think I have a problem.
Yeah. And what kind of alcohol did you drink? As you know, I'm an addiction counselor, and sometimes when I ask people what their drug of choice is or was, they say vodka.
I'm a whiskey drinker.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Jim Beam to be exact. Okay. Actually, that was like my heroin, as I would say, because nothing else affected me like that one for some reason.
And
it's weird.
And how much did you drink during, when it got really bad during the?
When it got really bad, I remember in college, me and my one guy friend, between the two of us, in a matter of 3 days, we could go through 4 1.75s of Jim Beam. So it's really high. And people could never believe how much I could drink for my size, being that I'm short and smaller. Mm-hmm. And I used to, pride myself on, oh, I can drink all the guys under the tables and being the best at the drinking games, like that was my identity. And that's, who I was then. But even my last, I've been arrested a few times for alcohol charges, and my last arrest, They told me my blood alcohol content was a 0.607.
Oh, my.
And I know that I've been more intoxicated than that.
Yes.
And I
that is so
yeah.
That is so high, that blood level.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty high.
Truly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were getting into trouble. And did you hit bottom? Do you believe in bottom?
Do I believe? Yeah. You know,
That's one of those intriguing questions.
It is an intriguing question because it's tough for me to answer that because, you know, so I struggled with alcoholism. You know, I knew at 16 that I had a problem because I was a blackout drinker. Hmm. And I didn't get long-term sobriety, well, starting until the age of 29. I'm 32 now. But,
yeah, we were talking about hitting a bottom.
Yeah, I've been trying to figure out what... if I would call it a bottom. Anyway, so lots of different things happened in that time frame. I lost jobs. I lost relationships, friendships, you know, different housing, whatever. Dropped out of college. I was a dropout. I was on a music scholarship and, like, because of my alcoholism, lost that. Anyway, that bottom, if we want to call it that, for me, it was a realization more so. I was just ready. Like, I had tried everything. I had been through so many treatments. I have been in and out of the hospital for like 10 years, you know, in the psych unit regularly. Mm-hmm. I was a frequent flyer there. And
were you living at home all this time or most of this time?
I lived at home for college and I had gotten some apartments. I remember at one point I got an apartment with a friend so we could do meth there. Mm-hmm. I've done other drugs too, meth, marijuana, all that stuff. I've done everything, but alcohol is still my drug, you know, was my drug of choice. Mm-hmm. But.
Yeah. Did you reach a stage of depression toward the end there?
You know, the depression, it seems like that's what started it out. You know, when I was 12, I was depressed and I didn't know why, you know, wanted to die and I couldn't understand it. And I just remember I carried that for a long time. And at some point in my late 20s, it seemed to have, I don't know if it vanished. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I changed. I don't know if it's because I started bringing spirituality into my life and praying and, but I've been on a lot of the mental health aspect as well, you know, being that I felt like I was sad and depressed and I'm an alcoholic and what's wrong with me? Like, I wanted a pill to fix me. So I saw lots of therapists and I've been on like a gamut of psych meds as well. Mm-hmm. Picked up some diagnoses, but I'm not on any psych meds anymore. To find out, for me, it's just being an alcoholic and I didn't know. That's the only thing that was wrong with me. It was just, I'm an alcoholic. And because it makes you feel crazy. You think crazy. Yeah. You do crazy things. It's like, why can't you stop doing these things? Like, what's wrong with me? Why do I live in so much fear? Like, there has to be something more. And, you know, after getting into recovery more, you know, I'm just an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
Did you, and so how long have you been, you know, abstinent or in recovery, so to speak?
I have been clean and sober for 3 years since Easter, this Sunday. I just celebrated 3 years.
So we're recording this program just a couple of days after, after April the 1st. So, well, so good for you. Did you go through a treatment right before that? That 3 years?
Actually, my last drunk, I was in the psych unit. Mm-hmm. I did have a job, but I had to. So anyway, what happened after that was I just had a breakup and I didn't have anywhere to go. And I didn't want to go live with my parents because my family is, they drink and whatever. And I didn't think it would be the best place for me. So I did enter a sober living home after that. Good. So I was in a sober living home. The day I entered the sober living home would be April Fool's Day 3 years ago, the same day as my sobriety date. So, because I didn't count the time in the hospital. So everything 100% out of me is my sobriety date.
So that sober living home really made a big difference, didn't it? I mean, it sounds like it.
Well, it was. I needed a safe environment, and I really wanted to get into recovery, and that really helped me, you know, because it was a recovery-based sober living home focused on.
Sure, Now, do you view this, your experience as a spiritual awakening?
Absolutely. You know, I really do. Like, and I remember people saying like it's a spiritual thing. And I just rejected that so much. I'm like, how is me practicing some kind of spiritual principles going to save my life and stop me from drinking? Like, that's crazy, you know, crazy talk. And so even that same day that I entered in that sober living home, that obsession was totally lifted from me. Like, I mean, I thought about drinking all the time, and it was so consuming, all life consuming. And yeah, that definitely happened. And then a few days later is when I feel like I surrendered. It's something that we talk about in recovery as well. Yes. Is that big serenity. I finally just turned it all over and I just said, you know what? I can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I am done. Like, I just can't do this anymore. And I remember the feeling that I had after that was just, you know, not everyone gets sometimes these big spiritual moments. A lot of the time they're just small and little, but mine was just, it was huge. I mean, I even saw stuff and like just felt like this serenity that I have never felt anything like before in my entire life. And it was amazing.
That certainly sounds like a spiritual awakening.
Yeah. Yeah.
that concept of, and I was going to so many support meetings and everything, that concept of surrender was very important to me too. When you finally just turn it over, when you finally just turn it over and stop trying to control it, because you can't do that either. And just, I used to picture myself waving a little white flag.
Right? Yeah, that's what it is. Because it's such a hard concept to even describe. Because I remember hearing about it before it happened for me. And I couldn't grasp it. I didn't get it. I didn't know what it meant. And, you know, I guess I just needed one more time. And finally just be like, God, I'm just, you know, trying to control everything. And there's just so much I can't control. And it's okay. It's okay.
Part of that is what happens with addiction is it starts controlling you.
Right.
You really have to surrender and seek help and kind of turn it over to others, to a higher power or whatever.
Yeah, whatever it is.
And you used another important word. I'm wearing a serenity band here, a serenity bracelet, because it's so important to me. And of course, we talk about serenity in treatment, and that is so important to me also. And I think to most people in recovery and to most treatment programs, how would you describe serenity?
That feeling of calm and peace, and just knowing that, like, no matter what's happening around me, like, everything is okay. And that's, you know, that's my higher power, and that's God, or, you know, I choose to call it God sometimes not. Sometimes I call it energy. Sometimes I call it love. You know, it is what it is. It's different for everyone, or maybe it's something. It's nothing for some people. But, you know, I don't know how I could stay sober without having things like that in my life, the serenity, the calmness and peace, because, you know, I never knew that before, and I didn't know how to obtain it, and I didn't know it even existed. I didn't know I could live life having those things and be sober. You know, it's just amazing.
You've probably heard about the concept of mindfulness, and you've probably read about mindfulness, and I've read a couple of books on mindfulness now, and what I say to myself is, well, they're just talking about serenity or about being able to experience serenity. I think that mindfulness helps you to experience those moments of being in the now.
Right. And, you know, we live life so mindlessly. You know, like I was so consumed in myself and my problems and my depression
and about
my fear,
yesterday and tomorrow.
And all these things, and nothing about what happened now. And I'm consumed about all these things that I can't do anything about. Like, I can't do anything about yesterday. I can't do anything about tomorrow. Mm-hmm. The only thing I can do anything right now is about now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm paying attention to my behaviors and what's happening right here.
And sometimes just being able to concentrate on your own breath and or being able to concentrate on the beauty there is in the world.
Now we're talking about meditation.
Right. and mindfulness, which is a form of meditation.
Right.
Could you point to one important event in your life that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back? I mean, as far as your recovery, or was it more gradual?
I would love to, actually.
Yes,
it was that psych unit stay the last time. Whenever I talk about my recovery, I do talk about the last time that I was in the psych unit. I had tried to start working more on my recovery before that, and I wasn't really doing things that were suggested to me. and I was making other things more important, namely a relationship. Mm-hmm. I had never in my life made recovery the most important thing to me, never made that commitment to it. And I remember being, you know, I've been in the recovery community before at a young age, and I remember I had seen people then that are still sober now. And I'm like, man, if they're doing something that works, if it works for them, I think it could probably work for me too. And I just, you know, I was in the psych ward and I was full of fear, but I remember getting down on my knees and praying like crazy. I just prayed and prayed and prayed and found some recovery literature and read what it said in there and was doing what people suggested me to do. And just something came over me. And I could only other describe it as a higher power. So, you know, because it's indescribable what that was. Mm-hmm. And I remember being in, they have group therapy there. And we did three positive affirmation cards. And I still have those cards. And they're on the door when I go out of the day. And they said, I will stay sober. I am completely taken care of. And I can face all my fears.
I love that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wrote that. And then I also wrote what I'd like my life to look a year from now when I was in there. And I found that. I forgot I did that. And like over a year later, I read that and I had everything that I had written down in there. So it was crazy. So yeah, something came over me. I was just ready. I was ready to make recovery the most important thing in my life. And it's crazy how quickly so many things changed for me for the better. Mm-hmm. Like when I made that decision that I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm in 100%. I'm going to do whatever it takes. And like, that to me before always sounded like such a tall order. Like, what am I going to have to do? How much am I going to have to change my life? They say you just have to change everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that all those fears that came up. And then when I actually made the decision and started doing these things, it's crazy how everything just worked out. As soon as I make my recovery, my higher power, the most important thing in my life, everything else just falls in place. Because right before that, I learned that I had put something else before that and I lost that. So, you know, it's just when I make that number one, everything else just seems to work. It's magical almost, you know?
Yeah, sure.
Yep.
Well, what are some of the qualities of recovery what's some of the wisdom that you have to follow, or what is some of the wisdom you have discovered?
By wisdom, do you mean like practices I do?
Practices would be one thing, but I'm also thinking of concepts such as humility or, forgiveness, gratitude.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. You know, a lot of spiritual principles, that's what I try to live my life by now, because I didn't realize how self-centered I was. And I've found that humility is what I need as the opposite of that, and how much I did live my life in fear. And to combat fear, I find love to combat that. And that's my understanding of God and that forgiveness. You know, all these things I wasn't full of resentments more as much as I was full of fear. And for me, I need to constantly surrender that. Surrender is huge. Surrender, humility, acceptance, another key one. When I was in the psych unit the last time, I remember saying there's this acceptance reading. And I would say that over and over, just accepting my situation for where I was, because, you know, I was in a terrible place, but I still, what could I do about it other than accept it?
And just, sure.
You know, so yeah, acceptance, forgiveness, humility, love, patience.
Patience.
Yeah, that's another one. Yeah. Yep.
You know, when you say humility, what's your definition there? And I always think of, and I heard someone reciting, a lot of us here grew up Christian, but I think of the Beatitudes, you know, there's so much wisdom in the Beatitudes, and obviously humility is one of, blessed are the humble, right? I don't know anything about the Beatitudes.
Yeah.
But what do you mean by humility?
I keep it simple as just doing God's will, because anything that I'm doing of myself is in selfishness.
Sure.
And I've heard other people say, not thinking less of myself, but thinking of myself less.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So not being so consumed in self. When I first got in, my understanding was, now I'm not thinking I'm better than other people. I'm not thinking I'm worse than other people. We're all on the same plane, you know, not being lesser than bigger. Like, 'cause I have a tendency to be an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. Like, I can be so full of myself and then hate myself at the same time. So it's that it's that middle ground is that humility.
Yeah. And I like, and I love the expression, you cannot keep it unless you give it away. So that's a...
Absolutely. Because, you know, I didn't get sober on my own. I had other people help me. I had a huge support system. And, oh, man, that was what another big key factor in helping me to get sober is that there's other people in the recovery community, and they just love you. Like, I would go back out and drink, and I'd come back, and they'd be like, oh, welcome back, you know, and give me... give me hugs and love, and, you know, having that unconditional love. Because you, as being addicts and alcoholics, man, do we burn our bridges. And just, you know, people are just so upset with us and they don't understand. And it's really hard to understand if you're not in it yourself. Because it's just like, why would you keep doing these things? Why can't you stop? I don't get it. So there's these, you know, there's people out there that understand what we're going through because they've been there, you know, and they're there to help. And so, and that's those people that helped me, you know, that was huge for me. So I want to be able to, you know, to keep it, I got to give it away. Yep, just like you said.
You're a young person, especially compared to me, but you're 32 years old.
Correct.
And you work in a recovery center, a treatment center. And, you meet a lot of young people who are in recovery, and as I do every single day. I think the average listener would be surprised at the average age today of our patients, if you know what I mean.
Right,
I mean,
yeah.
It's getting younger all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm often concerned about what young people, how much there is or is not to do in this community. For young people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what, you know, as a young person in recovery, what's the, you know, how do you spend your time, you know, having fun or with leisure activities? And obviously for you, they have to be sober activities, you know.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. So I remember one of the other fears I had was, oh my gosh, if I get sober, what am I going to do? Because that was my whole life. You know, I just drank all the time. I did drugs all the time. That's all I ever did and sometimes worked. And kind of held down jobs here and there and went to school. but for me, you know, it's crazy how busy my life is, how I actually don't have a lot of free time anymore because there are things. And, you know, it's I'm a believer in, like, the law of attraction as well. As like, if I put out there what I'm looking for, like, it will come to me. Just like how, like, when I wrote that letter of, like, what I'd like my life to be like, I put it out there and it came to me. So, you know, that's what I did is I started searching, like, things I thought of wanting to do. So I'm very involved in CrossFit is one thing. I love
physical
it.
Fitness.
I love any kind of physical stuff. I'm on a softball team. I like to go camping. I like to go biking. I like to get outside, go fit. I mean, there's actually so much to do. It's interesting. I'm also very involved with my church. I'm a member of the United Church of Christ. And so I'm on the music committee there. I'm on the ONA, another committee for a few other things.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, there really is. Yeah. There are a lot of things. Now they have new these art galleries that someone else has opened up. And,
sure.
You know, there really are things to do. You know, but when it's something.
Good to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go to CrossFit, so we have a wonderful YMCA with so much going on. And I know, and I'm from a big city. we moved here 1981 here to Bismarck, Mandan. And. Mm-hmm. But my hometown is Milwaukee, and during my junior high school years and high school years, boy, we went bowling a lot.
Yeah, there's that.
That was,
golf.
We went golfing a lot.
Love golf.
I'm an avid golfer, you know, a lot of pickup baseball games and even touch football games. But I don't know. Milwaukee is kind of a famous city for bowling, so might have been more bowling alleys per capita there than but I remember summer, and this, here's an indication of how old I am, but I remember as a kid bowling four games for $1. Can you imagine that?
Yeah, it's crazy. That's that not the prices anymore.
that was the summertime. But so what do you say to someone who's listening to this radio program, and they know they've got a problem, you know, and they tried to quit 100 times. They know they have to quit. One of these days, when they get around to it, you know that expression. But what's your best advice?
Don't give up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whatever you do, don't give up. Because I remember, I thought it was the most impossible task in the world to me, with people telling me, like, to get sober. Like, I thought that was not possible. And I just kept trudging along. You know, luckily I had at least one person telling me not to give up, just keep trying and just keep going. And, you know, trying all these different avenues. Like, had I fully given up, I never would have gotten sober. So, yeah. You know, yeah. And there's no, you never know when it's going to happen for someone. The miracle, as I call it, you know, the miracle happened for me, and it can happen for everyone. And I totally believe that.
Yeah.
You know? Just reach out, seek help. Yes. We have some resources here. Use that. There's places you can go, you know, look up things online.
And you can call New Freedom. You can call Heartview, you know, call your minister, call your family doctor and get those referrals. I use the word miracle also. I really do feel that the urge to drink, because alcohol was my number one, has been lifted from me. And miracle is a pretty descriptive word to use there. I just have we've experienced great loss, deep loss, and even then. So, and how do you face disappointment? Like, when something bad happens in your life, do you have a new way of facing that?
Yeah, you know, I have a whole new outlook on life. I really do. I just decided to see things differently. Even before I got sober, I tried to look at life a little bit differently. Because, you know, I know things are going to happen that I don't like, and they're not going to go my way. But I still have this underlying knowing that everything's going to be okay, that serenity, you know, that trust. And someone that is close to me brings up the story of, is it Buddy Holly and... So the day that music died, I think, where there was a plane crash, right? So they were, someone else was supposed to be on that plane, and he was very disappointed that he didn't get on that plane.
Yes.
And that plane ended up crashing.
Right.
So, you know, that looking at things like that, like, maybe this is happening for a reason that I don't know yet.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And,
No.
Because things might not always go my way, and that's okay.
No.
Because when things, when I tried to make things go my way, it didn't work out so well.
Good attitude. Good attitude. So a lot of those things that you wrote down as goals in your early treatment or in early recovery, a lot of those things have come true, you've said. And
things I'd like to, how I would like my life to look.
Yeah.
How, if I could have it look any way I wanted it to look.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I got that.
Yeah. What's the number one thing that you got? Recovery? Or, I mean, after
staying sober.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was still sober. A year sounded impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, a few days that sometimes were impossible. Yeah. A minute was impossible. So to even have over a year was just incredible, you know.
Well, I told you it was going to go fast. So
indeed it did.
And I want to say our guest has been Susie Bartosz, and she's from Bismarck, age 32. Happens to work at New Freedom, which is a treatment center in Bismarck. Boy, we could keep talking for another hour,
I could.
We close with the Serenity Prayer, if you would pray it with me. And it's God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
I sing the song because I love the man. I know that some of you don't understand. Milk, blood to keep from running out. I've seen the needle and the damage done, a little part of it in everyone, but every junkie's like a setting sun.